Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 181 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head out to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, and subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. I assume Thunder fans enjoyed this weekend, even though it included that terrible game against Phoenix, which was just the least enjoyable game to watch of the year. Because then Sunday happened, and the Thunder fell down double digits in Denver at the end of the game. And then Russell Westbrook, after clinching triple-double number 42, scored 13 points in a row down the stretch when the Thunder were down 10 with 2.5 minutes left. And all he did was hit a game-winning three at the end at the buzzer. First time he's ever hit a buzzer-beater game winner, ever. And the Thunder won 106-105. Unbelievable performance. Westbrook finished with 50 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists. Triple-double number 42. Passes Oscar Robertson. Most ever in a single season. He's got the average now. He's got the aggregate record now. Unbelievable. My problem with the triple-doubles are just a round number argument. My problem is that it's so binary. And it's funny because the people making it are usually people who are generally rational. And they're usually making it like on behalf of rationality. But when people say, 10, 10, and 10 isn't nearly as good as 40, 15, and 9, of course they're right. First of all, it's an irrelevant point to Westbrook because Westbrook is leading the league in scoring. If you were averaging 10, 10, and 10, it would be a lot more relevant. But he had 50, 16, and 10, and he's averaging 32 or 31, 11, and 10. He's going to win a scoring title. So that to me isn't relevant to Westbrook anyway. But even if it were, it's a binary point. Here's how you combat that point. Just because 28, 9, and 15, or 40, 18, and 8 is better than 10, 10, and 10, it doesn't make 10, 10, and 10 not great. That's still a great game. And having 42 of those in one season, and the Thunder are 33 and 9 when he does it. It's remarkable. I never thought he was going to do this. I never thought anybody would be able to do this. And meanwhile, like the triple-double, somehow the triple-double is now almost a secondary storyline because I won the game. It reminded me, like as a Yankees fan, it reminded me of Derek Jeter's 3,000th hit game. Because Jeter was obviously all the flair. Like his last game at Yankee Stadium, he had the walk-off. Even like Jeter, when he wasn't as great anymore, he still had that flair. Similar to Russ in some ways. Obviously, personality-wise, they're very different. But in that way, it's kind of similar. They've always got that flair for the dramatic. Jeter's 3,000th hit game. His second at-bat of the game was the 3,000th hit. He hit a home run. And then he went 5-for-5 in that game, and the fifth hit was a game-winning hit. And this just kind of, even before Russ hit the game winner, I was like, this feels like, it's got like a Jeter 3,000 hit feel. And it was an incredible game. Russell was like, he was about as giddy as he's been all year after that game, I thought. Let's get right to Twitter questions. From Steven Lutzky, is the clutch time Russ insanity, usage, true shooting percentage, RPM, are they sustainable in the playoffs, even slightly? So here's what I take of the Russell Westbrook clutch time stuff. So for those who don't know, Westbrook, after this performance on Sunday afternoon, now is averaging exactly 60.0 points per 36 minutes in games that are within 5 points with 5 or fewer minutes to go. That's considered clutch time. 5-point game, 5 or fewer minutes to go. And he is averaging now 60 points per 36 minutes in that time. And he's got the highest usage ever in doing it. It's a little over 62%, which is insane. It's the highest clutch time usage in recorded history, which goes back to 1996 on NBA.com. But he's actually been above average efficiency. As a matter of fact, his true shooting percentage, which is 57% in clutch time, his true shooting percentage in clutch time is better than his true shooting percentage in the rest of the game. It's about the same. He's 56% overall in the season. He's 57% in clutch time. But it's amazing what he's doing. He's been able to get it that high. He's getting to the line a lot late in games, like 18 or 19 times per 36 minutes. That's really helped hold up his efficiency. He's hit so many big shots. He's led so many big comebacks in all these games. And the Thunder, meanwhile, have the second best net rating in the NBA during clutch time, only worse than the Spurs. And they're now 25-15 in games that go into clutch time. If they split those games, if they're 20-20 in those games, which is probably, that's what your average team is going to do in clutch time, there's going to be a much higher variance in a 3-minute game than in a 48-minute game. But if the Thunder are averaging those games, they're 20-20. Let's say Russ doesn't have the magic in the two Boston games. He doesn't do the Orlando game. He doesn't do the Dallas game. And he doesn't do this one. And there's still more. There's the first game in Denver. There's Utah. There are a couple games where he was incredible down the stretch and he just couldn't get them all the way there. Like the one in Phoenix, for example. Indiana. But just 20-20. The Thunder are 41-39 on the season. They're an average team. So it's been incredible because this happened. But the way that you have to look at clutch time, the way that you have to evaluate that moving forward is you can't use it as a predictor. Like I said, there's so much variance in a 3-minute game, even a series of 3-minute games. The sample size is just never large enough. And at some point, shots aren't going to go in. So I don't believe in using it as a predictor. I fully believe in using it as a way to evaluate a season. Because I think when you evaluate a season, like for example, in MVP and stuff, and I've made this argument a lot. But when you evaluate a season, you're evaluating what happened, not what would have been most likely to happen if you simulated out the season 1,000 times. Not would have been the greatest result of things that happened. You're evaluating what happened in this scenario in the 2016-17 season, and the clutch stuff happens. And the clutch stuff, when it happens over and over and over again, has a ton of value, obviously. But I don't think it necessarily projects. If it does, you know, some people they defy logic. Maybe this Westbrook season is something that's just going to continue to defy logic. So I don't think the clutch stuff is going to transfer. But I do think I'm not going to get too much into the playoff series, even though we know the Thunder are going to be playing the Rockets right now, because I'm going to have a whole preview podcast before that series starts. And I'll make sure to go through everything in there. I do think in that playoff series, like, the Thunder are going to win at least one game in that series just because Westbrook steals it. Westbrook's going to win him a game. Just like I think Houston's just going to win at least one game in that series because Harden's going to steal it. That's what's going to be the fun in that series. Like, the Westbrook game and the Harden game, and there could be multiple Westbrook games and multiple Harden games, absolutely, in that series. Just the possibility for that is going to be great. So I think that's something that will transfer, but it's really hard to project someone is going to score 13 points in the last 2.5 minutes of a game. That's really hard to project. Next one from Nick Hodge. Based on the games this season, how do you think OKC can do against Houston and what they need to prepare for most? So I said I wasn't going to get much into the Houston series, but I will give a little tidbit because the Thunder are locked into 3, or the Thunder are locked into 6. Houston is locked into 3. They're going to be playing. Playoffs start on Saturday. They could play Saturday. They could play Sunday. It's certainly possible they get that like afternoon Sunday slot. I don't know when they're going to be, but I think it'll be in a good time. Like, this is going to be the most anticipated series. Harden versus Russ. Houston's a fun team. Russ is just must-watch TV every single night. Most important thing to prepare, though, the reason I say this is because the Thunder have struggled, and they did it against Phoenix again, to guard small teams. When Steven Adams has to go out to the perimeter, they're not as good. They're just not as good, and it's not necessarily because Adams is so bad on the perimeter. That's not as much what the issue is. It's that guys get into the lane, and the other defenders aren't doing their jobs well enough as help guys. And the rim protection's just not there. The rim protection is just not there. So that's something they had a major problem with Houston last time. Now, Capella isn't going to be around the rim a lot, but they sometimes feel like they have to switch with Houston. The pick-and-roll coverages that they decide to do in that series are going to be real interesting. I could see them doing some creative stuff, which I'll get into more on the preview podcast, but that's your little tidbit. That's your little taste of Houston talk. Next one from Ben Vance. Ignoring MVP, how will people look back on Russell's season in 10 years? I like this question because I do think, I don't know who's going to win MVP. I don't know. Obviously it could be Russ. I still think Harden definitely could win it. But I do think the MVP of the season and the story of the season are two different things. And like, I do think whether he wins this or not, people are going to look back on this as the Westbrook season. And it's not just the triple doubles. It's all the drama. It's the storyline. It's that he's having this season, the first one after Kevin Durant left. You know, honestly, I think Russell Westbrook's future in Oklahoma City would have an impact on that, too. If he doesn't stay, if he ends up staying, you know, for talking 10 years down the line, if he doesn't stay, if he stays, how long he stays, if he does stay, I think all of that would have an effect on how this season is remembered. And I do think, at least in the moment, I think that people are going to look back on this and this will be the Westbrook season. Just like 2011 was the Dirk season. Like 2011 was the Dirk season. He didn't win MVP. I think this year will be the Russ season. Next, from Matthew Broussard, will Coach Donovan look to rest any players in any of these final games now that Russ has the record and they're locking into that six seed? Yeah, I think they will. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. My guess is they're going to rest guys on Tuesday. Now, Andres got the sore left knee. He was on a minutes restriction on Sunday. And this is not anything that I've been told. They just haven't made decisions yet on what exactly they're going to be doing in terms of rest. But I think certain guys will. I would make a pretty educated guess that Andre's not going to play on Tuesday. I think the knee is fine. They're fine with using him in the playoffs. Just no point in risking it. It's a back-to-back Tuesday-Wednesday. They come home on Wednesday to play Denver. I don't think he's going to end up playing. I think you could say McDermott could sit. Russ could potentially sit. I don't see why anyone, would, himself included, would want to play on a back-to-back to close the season. Adams could have a rest. Cantor said he doesn't want to rest. Cantor said he doesn't like resting. Said it gets him out of his rhythm, but he doesn't play a ton of minutes. So, you know, he could just be one of those games where Cantor plays and he plays 30 minutes and he gets just like his crazy amount of numbers on Tuesday. And then I think if they play guys on Wednesday, they'll limit minutes, you know. I don't think Russell Westbrook is playing 34 minutes in a game again this season. There's no way. There's no point. And I don't think any of those guys are going to be doing that. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of the end of the bench. You'll be seeing more Kyle Singler and all that. Speaking of Kyle Singler, last one from Chris Hodge. When did Singler come out of his coma and remember how to play good basketball? This is the best Kyle Singler played all year. He played 34 minutes in this game. Billy Donovan used him real quickly because Dre was on Robertson's on that minutes limit. McDermott wasn't available with the sore left knee, and he played Singler 34 minutes. Jeremy Grant's rotations are weird. I guess Donovan just doesn't want to use him as a three anymore. I was planning on asking him after the game, but obviously there were just so many questions to ask about Russ. I didn't get a chance to do it. If I'm able to get, I have an early flight to Minnesota tomorrow. If I'm able to get to practice, I'm getting in like right up against practice. I might not be able to make it. But if I am able to make it to practice, I will ask him about Jeremy Grant because he didn't come in until about the six minute marker or so in the second quarter. He's had games where he hasn't played Grant at all in the first half. And then he's played him a ton of minutes in the second half. This game, he didn't come in until the six-minute marker in the second. Now he played 22 minutes. Really likes using him as a three a lot more, or as a four a lot more now. You can see, which I agree with that. I think he's a better four for sure. The distribution with Grant has just been weird. And I don't know why it's been like that. I really don't know why it's been like that, but I wonder what it's going to be. Singler was good. Singler was good in this game. He played pretty solid defensive game. Moved the ball okay. Had a really nice finish in transition. Did a pretty good job. No one went to leak out. Russ found him a few times on the break. I mean, he played pretty well in this game. I don't know if it means all that much, but it was nice to see him have a game at the end of the year where he recontributed and played well. Remember, I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com, and you can find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the team there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back tomorrow. I'll be recording that pod from Minnesota. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.